my experience with the thing is similar to yours. Although, because this has only happened to you recently and you've never done it before, you're a bit more subsumed by the reality distortion field than the rest of us.
I am. I'm frankly, my eyes are twinkly right now.
Enjoy it, man. This is like Brave New World or something, right? You know, you climb out of the Soma pit later.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Bad Voltage, Season 3, Episode 17. I hope you're all safe and well.
Yay!
Here with my compadres, Stuart Ian Langridge and Jeremy Annabelle Garcia.
Continue to be such a muppet.
By the law of averages, we'll get it right one day.
We will.
You won't even know when it happens.
Maybe we already have got it right. It could be Annabelle. And it he's just doing the well poker face thing.
Yeah. No, for sure.
I want it to be something like Horace. Horace would be good.
Horace would be good. Horatio, perhaps.
Horatio. Ranulf. It's good to be here with all of you lovely people. We aren't going to do anything but talk about one thing today. And we're going to talk about phones. We're going to talk about new phones that have been purchased in the Bad Voltage team.
Yes.
I'm not going to tell you what the phones are. But one of them is extremely pixely, so in nature.
Your subtlety is unsubtle today.
Yeah, no,
We're going to celebrate mediocrity in all of its wonderful forms. So shall we dig in, chaps?
Let's do it.
We shall.
So I know you two have been whining about getting a new phone. Jeremy in particular was talking about getting the Pixel 5, and
I think I was actually talking about not getting the Pixel 5, but yes.
well this is the thing. Do I understand that that like the weak-willed consumer slave you are, you may have caved in?
So after saying that I probably was not going to get the Pixel 5, what I went ahead and did was get the Pixel 5.
So here is your actual chance. So tell us about it.
Regular listeners will know that I'm a big fan of the Pixel line of phones, and I was a Nexus fan before that. The unadulterated, bloatware-free Android experience really is top-notch. That said, for the first time since the Pixel 1, I decided to skip the Pixel 4 for a variety of reasons. There were just too many things about it I didn't like. The Pixel 5 got me back on board, though, and I've had it for a few weeks now. Here's what I think. On paper, the Pixel 5 seems a bit, if not disappointing, then underwhelming. It sports a 6-inch OLED display and a 90Hz refresh rate and a bezel-less design. It has wireless charging, fingerprint unlock, and is IP68 dust and waterproof. The phone ships with 8GB of memory and 128GB of storage. All good so far, you may be thinking. But eschewing a flagship SoC for the Snapdragon 765G resulted in Google taking quite a bit of flack. So did including the same main camera as the previous generation Pixel, and shipping with two front-facing cameras instead of the three that's becoming the standard on flagship phones. What's clear to me is that at $699, Google decided to stop playing the $1,000 plus flagship game. They got back to basics, and it's surprisingly good. While the display on the Pixel 5 is 6 inches versus the 5.5 inches of my previous Pixel 3, the phone is almost identical in size, and this is due to the almost complete lack of a bezel. What isn't even close to identical in size, though, is the battery. The Pixel 3 came in just over 2900 milliamp hours, where the Pixel 5 is just under 4100 milliamp hours, and the difference is night and day. And by that, I mean, come nighttime, you'll actually still have a charge. The phone is aluminum, but with a resin coating that I quite like. It's grippier than glass and isn't as much of a fingerprint magnet as many newer phones. Gone is the facial unlock and Soli that never quite panned out. As for the supposedly slow silicon, for me, it's more than sufficient. If you're a really, really serious gamer or more than likely obsessed with benchmarks, you may notice a difference, but I'm a pretty heavy user of my phone and I don't. So, what's the bottom line? There's nothing groundbreaking or mesmerizing about the Pixel 5's design. or about the Pixel 5 in general. At $699, this should be a phone of trade-offs, a phone of compromises. Ours ran a review titled, Google Spends Its Bill of Materials Budget Unwisely, but I think they missed the mark. Google managed to add 2 gigs of RAM, double the default storage to 128 gigs, increase battery life by 50%, and still make the phone $200 cheaper. It's a near perfect bill of materials if it wasn't for millimeter wave. I'm guessing they made some kind of deal with Verizon, but adding somewhere between $50 and $100 to the phone's cost makes very little sense for something that almost no one will use. Despite the mid-tier chipset, running an unfettered version of Android means the chip isn't bogged down and lets the Pixel 5 deliver an Android experience that feels just as fast as it does on phones with much faster chips. The massive battery life is a game changer, and the device just feels right in your hands. While I've always had a quote-unquote flagship phone, and this one really isn't, it feels like one. A bit to my surprise, it's a great phone. The Pixel is back.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
which
is the thing. We've,
it actually
we've
is gone, interesting.
But we've got backwards and forwards on this. I know both of you have been thinking about it. And the overwhelming impression I took from your conversations and how you felt about it was that you were kind of underwhelmed by it conceptually. But yes. Jeremy, what you're saying is you caved in and bought it anyway. And now there's nothing massively special in it, but it's generally good at everything, and it's not $1,000.
No, I mean, for $700, I think it's probably one of the better values out there. Is it the interesting thing is Pixels have always been known for having the best camera, and they keep not changing the hardware and just relying on software, and I think that's finally caught up with them. You're noticing some of the newer flagship phones do have cameras that have better output. So I think at some point they're going to have to pay attention to the hardware. I think especially for the times that we're in 2020, this is a near perfect phone.
You know, it reminds me of when you were going through your review is I remember years ago getting, I think it was a Motorola G5, because I had a phone that conked out and I think I was waiting for the Pixel, and I got the Motorola, and it was, if I remember rightly, it was fairly cheap, but it was a really impressive little phone. Like it was fast and it ran almost vanilla Android, and it made me think, do I really want to get a Pixel? Like, this is really good. And it seems like you've had a similar kind of experience there, right?
Yeah. I mean, as my review there indicated, there's nothing that's going to wow you about this phone. But as just an everyday phone that you use, it's not terrible at anything, and it's very good at everything.
And we have, to a reasonable extent, kind of peaked in terms of phone features. You're in the same situation now that PC manufacturers were in some years ago, where they're like, well, what can we say about this one, which is actually better than the last one? We basically got it sorted now. So they keep inventing brand new features that nobody cares about, just in order they can say, we've got all these new features. Because, and I honestly don't know whether this is true or not. Certainly, there are a whole bunch of marketing people, especially in the tech world, who believe that people buy stuff because of a new because of a list of features, even if they're not going to use those features.
I mean,
I'm not a marketeer. They are. It's their job. So I assume they know more about it than I do. It drives me crazy because you think, well, nobody wants half this stuff.
So this is where I think the reviews largely, especially the reviews that came out initially one day after the phone came out, like I said, it is underwhelming in a lot of ways from a pure, I'm looking at the spec sheet perspective. Why would you ship with 765G as a SoC, right? When so many more are available, you're basically shipping with a SoC slightly slower than the Pixel 4, which seems like a weird design decision. But I think the Pixel and Google have gone all in on, we're going to maybe do one or two things a generation that are genuinely trying to be innovative. Solely would be an example of that. It happened not to pan out. But I like that they tried something new. And if it would have, that would have been a genuine technological advancement, which, as you noted, becoming a little bit more rare with phones.
Yeah.
Because it's tough. But I think they're all in on phones are software. And I am tending to agree with them. Android 11 is, as should every new version of Android, should be the best version of Android ever released. But I think they focused on stability and smoothness and experience. The design of the software is, I think, the best version. It's the most usable version of Android yet. It does take some getting used to because they're moving more towards gestures and more. They were a little bit reticent to do some of the things that I think Apple has already moved to, as much as they get kind of dinged for copying Apple a little bit. They went all in on Android 11 if you enable them all by default. I did. I was annoyed for about the first 8 to 12 hours, but now I cannot imagine going back. Like the software back button I disabled really annoyed me. I now could not go back to a phone with a software back button. Swiping from the left to the right is, once you're used to it, so much better that it's difficult to articulate for something so minor.
It's way better. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I
but
agree.
You're just your muscle memory of the last 5 versions of Android. You know, people are resistant to change.
I did think, since we're talking about hardware changes, I didn't know what millimeter wave was. And then I thought, hang on, does this mean you can scan people to see if they're carrying guns or something in the airport? And then I looked it up, right?
Yeah, no, you can scan people in the airport because only Verizon uses it.
The reason I'd never heard of it, it's 5G. For people who've never heard of this millimeter wave thing in the context of phones, it's 5G, but it's very specifically not just the 5G that everyone's rolling out. It's not in the UK. It's not even licensed in the UK at all. In the US, every phone company does it in the US, but in a very tiny way. But Verizon appear to have gone big into it.
Only Verizon. I think they're only in 4 cities.
I read a couple of things which said that AT&T do it for business a little tiny bit, and T-Mobile have got a little tiny bit of it. But as far as everyone on Earth or everyone in the US is concerned, if you're on T-Mobile and you have a millimeter wave compatible phone, you still won't get millimeter wave.
No. And so the thing to understand about millimeter wave, if you're not familiar with it, is it gives you outrageously fast speeds, but it's highly, highly impacted by things like walls and windows and sheets of paper. So it's not the one use case that it will be super good for is if you're at a stadium, that stadium is covered by millimeter wave. That density of people in one giant open space, millimeter wave in that very specific use case, game changer. Other than that, it's not great.
I can imagine it being useful for things like self-driving cars or whatever, because they're outdoors. I saw a bunch of stuff saying, okay, if you are the sort of person who is on Verizon and wants to buy a brand new phone and does a lot of high-end network gaming on your phone while standing on a street corner, millimeter wave is useful to you. And I went, huh.
So the other thing, though, about the self-driving car is you have to have antennas constantly. So they're not going to take whole expressways and cover them with millimeter wave. It's for dense urban areas only.
Like I said, I mean, I literally knew, I'd never even heard of it in the context of phones until I read the stuff that you were going to talk about, and then I looked into it.
It made more sense for them to have a version that included it and a version that excluded it, which they did with the Pixel 4a, and they did not do for the Pixel 5.
I mean, the only other thing I feel I ought to point out is that your phone is made of aluminium. Well, I don't know. I mean,
it's interesting that they went through the effort of making the phone aluminum, but then covered it in resin. So it supports wireless charging, which most metal phones do not. And that's actually why most phones went to glass backs, was wireless charging. So they put a ton of engineering work into making this thing metal and supporting wireless charging, and then covered it in resin, which seems silly, but I don't think I'd want a phone that was like a MacBook. It's just too slippery and not something that you would like. The resin's actually surprisingly nice.
Now, Mr. Garcia, I do have a comment and then some questions for you about your new Pixel 5.
Sure.
The comment is, your what you said about Android 11 was interesting to me because with my Pixel 3, when I got the upgrade for Android 11, I've had nothing but stability issues. I've had the opposite experience, that it hasn't been stable at all. And that's probably because I'm running an older phone, but, you know, nonetheless.
How about an older Pixel phone?
So
it is a Pixel phone.
To interject slightly, I was coming from a Pixel 3 that I had updated to Android 11. I had no stability problems whatsoever.
Really?
There was some slight differences, though, in a fresh install on the 5 and the 3, more from a UI perspective and just usability. But I had no stability problems whatsoever on my 3.
Wow. Yeah, I was constantly having to reboot my phone. And I haven't done anything particularly special with it. It's not like I'm rooting it or anything like that.
I basically rebooted once a month for security updates.
Right. Huh. Interesting. Now, questions. Yes. First question is, why did you go with the Pixel 5 and not one of the other litany of Android phones? I know that you probably don't want to go with Samsung phones because of the amount of crap that they install on them, but what about some of the other phones that are a bit more vanilla? Why did you go Pixel 5?
Yeah, a couple reasons there. For Samsung specifically, it was both the UI decisions that they make and the bloatware are one. Their just lack of timely updates is another one. They tend to lag further behind than I would want to lag. There are some other manufacturers, and I've gone non-Pixel in the somewhat recent past. I had an Essential and really liked it. But for some of the other ones, like I looked at the Oppo, which they came out with that bonkers flagship phone, and putting aside that it's, whatever, $1,200 or something, this is a massive phone. And I am of the mindset that this is the right size. The 6-inch screen, which initially I thought was going to be too large, because it is truly bezel-less, it's not any bigger than my Pixel 3, which is, to me, the right size. All the other nice phones are tablets to me, and I don't want to carry around a tablet. I have a tablet. Don't want to carry it around with me all the time.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And what about you? You mentioned the software, right? So I remember when I bought my the last phone, Pixel that I bought was the Pixel 3. And one of the major reasons why I was attracted to it was because of all the really cool software things that Google were doing. And it seems to me like... I just don't hear as much about Google innovating when it comes to software as much as they used to. What's new from a software perspective that's kind of struck you with the Pixel 5? Or is there much to report there?
So I'm guessing that that's a little bit deliberate on their end, in that I think they really, really focused on stability, usability, and polish for Android 11 and skipped a bunch of features. There's a couple new things in Google Assistant that I believe are exclusive to the Pixel. One of them is you can put it in a mode when you're on hold, and it will actually know when someone has answered and tell you and ring the phone, as opposed to you having to wait. So I think that is a Pixel exclusive, but most of the Pixel exclusive things are pretty minor.
And that, and to be clear, is also pretty minor.
that was included in the minor things. Yes. Oh, okay. I mean, I guess it's interesting
major thing, and there are things which are more minor than that.
Example of how minor the things are.
Right. Understood. Okay. Sorry. I apologize. Right.
That's interesting. You know, ever since I got my iPhone, I've been wondering whether I should have gone with
what?
You're what?
I didn't mention this. I got an iPhone.
Okay. Sorry, I appreciate it's not very good radio for us to just sit here with our mouths open.
You do look shocked.
Are your 30 pieces of silver in the post?
I tell you what, it's very difficult having a cool hipster haircut when you've got as little hair that I've got to warrant an iPhone.
Well, is there a pocket in your scarf that you can store your iPhone in?
So I was going to say, I guess I'm not very surprised. You've been acclimating to the hipster lifestyle now that you're in California. You've already
I resent that statement.
You're already
Mr. Gus.
Immersed in the Apple ecosystem. Like you have an Apple laptop. You're wearing iPod or whatever those things are called. AirPods. I was getting it wrong. AirPods. I'd say they're terrible, but I have Pixel Buds to go along with my Pixel 5, so I guess I can't ding you for that one. But you're already steeped in the ecosystem, is my point.
I am, and as if by an amazing feat of surprise, I have in fact prepared my own review of the new iPhone 12.
Well, come on then. I should be interested to hear this. So. Speak on.
I would prefer if you would be quiet as I read my review, and I don't want to hear any tittering or sniggering at the back, okay?
Okay. I can't make no rash promises.
Put it on iMute.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the iPhone. Now, for many years, it has existed, and for many years, I've in fact ignored it. While I'm not opposed to luxury premium devices, and while I'm never opposed to using things that others may deem trendy, there's kind of a trend out there of people rejecting things just because they're popular, I just haven't been very excited about iPhones. They've always struck me as too limited, too focused on an audience that wasn't me. Now, in hindsight, this was a bullshit argument. I'm hardly an Android power user. I'm not rooting phones, and I'm not building my own APKs. I just like the focus and flexibility of Android, and as somebody very invested in the Google ecosystem, both in my business and in my life, I always assumed Android devices, especially Google Android devices, would be better for Google power users. Then, Google announced the Pixel 5. And no offense, Jeremy, but I was bored. Given that my Pixel 3 was starting to show signs of an early demise, I was in the market for a new phone, so I held out, constantly refreshing the rumor websites for the hot new Pixel. And I was presented with a boring, run-of-the-mill phone that will sell more units, but just doesn't interest the power user. Now then, a friend of mine mused about getting an iPhone, and he's a long-time Android user. And for the first time ever, I looked at the iPhone website about the newly announced iPhone 12, and I was instantly hooked. I ended up plumping for the iPhone 12 Pro Max and literally maxed out the specs. Insane cameras, huge screen, half a fucking terabyte of storage. Hell yes. But would I like it? Well, then it arrived, and it's an absolute thing of beauty. The precision engineering, the crispness of the screen, and the insane battery life were just the beginning. I then explored the cameras. Now, I'm no photography expert, but I do know when a photo looks good. The portrait mode on the iPhone is especially impressive, blurring the background and delivering vibrant, powerful, striking colors. I've been wandering around my house like a weirdo, photographing everything in sight, but the most compelling example was the day after the phone arrived. You see, our kiddo just had his birthday, and my wife Erica and I spent our entire Friday evening blowing up 150 colorful balloons and decorating the house. It was the best we could do given the fact that he can't have any kids over due to the pandemic. It was also the perfect opportunity to test the camera, and it looked amazing. And this is when I started to get it. These weren't just photos. They were memories. They looked and felt different. And this is when it really struck me. This really is a genuine consumer premium device. Everything's so well designed and delivered that it feels buffed and sheened. The included apps and the phone, the App Store experience, the podcast experience, the video shooting and editing experience, everything just works and everything looks and feels consistent. And then there is the integration. iMessage is incredible, and the integration between my Mac and the phone is so much more elegant. No more shitty Android messages constantly losing the connection. Everything just works, and it doesn't end there. I can take and make phone calls on my computer. I can FaceTime with friends. I can AirDrop files with my family. I can share screens easily. You know, when I joined Canonical back in 2006, and Ak and I talked about this endlessly, I did so because I love the idea of a Linux distro that just worked. That was our mantra. It was our religion. We're design and experience of first-class citizens. I knew intellectually that Apple had done this, but I didn't quite realize the extent to which they've achieved it. Now, it's not perfect. There are annoyances. I don't like how cluttered the phone gets with apps. There are some system settings that aren't consistently applied, and the new MagSafe thing is a bit shit and not very magnetic at all, which defeats the point. And also, the phone's just really heavy. But these are tiny nitpicks. This phone has not just impressed me, it genuinely wowed me. It delivered far more than I ever expected, and my worry about an inferior Google experience on an iPhone was completely unfounded. I have everything I need working just fine. You see, the sad reality to me, and again, no offense to you, Jeremy, with your new Pixel 5, is that the iPhone delivered what I wanted from a Pixel, but I've now realized I'll never really get what I want from a Pixel. You see, Google make great software, but their hardware is just fine. Apple make amazing, beautiful hardware, and their software is much better than I ever expected. Well, apart from Apple Maps and Siri, they got turned off immediately. So I'm sorry, my friends, but I'm now going to be an insufferable Apple fanboy.
Okay, Jeremy, so now Jono's leaving the show. Do we want to get, what, Christina Warren to replace him, do you think? I mean,
sold.
I mean, Christina's got an iPhone as well, but she's not a bell-end about
it. That's a fair charge.
No offence to your new phone, Jeremy, but your new phone's dog shit. Check it off, maybe here in Apple land. That's really interesting.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, it is. They're great phones, dude. Seriously.
I knew it was going to be beautiful to look at. I knew the hardware was going to be beautiful. The thing that really surprised me more, as I mentioned in my review, it really was the software, like, which shouldn't have been surprising because I've got an iPad and I've got a Mac. And I don't love the iPad. It's primarily used for one specific purpose, which is recording videos. But I should have expected that with the iPhone. But I was always put off by the iPhone because it just always seemed like a bit of a, almost like a kid's phone to me. And how wrong I was. The software's much more elegant and well-designed than I ever expected.
So, I mean, I think it makes sense, at least from my perspective, to break this conversation down into a couple of different things. One, I'm just curious to have a little bit of a chat about what you think of the phone, but that there's hardware, there's software, there's the integration between the software and the rest of your life kind of thing, and then there's the respective ecosystems. So if either of you have something you'd like to tack on, cool, but it seems like
those are
logical breaking points. Yeah, so just generally speaking on the phone and what you've thought so far, one, I've not had an iPhone since like the second iPhone, so it's been a little while. How much did you pay for this iPhone 12 Max Pro loaded device?
Should I be holding on to something at this point?
I would prefer not to share that information.
Is it safe to say it's twice as much as a Pixel 5 or more than twice?
I bet it's more than.
It is more than twice as much as the Pixel 5 that you purchased.
Okay, so to directly compare them seems funny. The fact that we can directly compare them to me is a strong win for the Pixel 5.
I don't think it's fair to compare them. I think I mean, and I did spend an absolute assload of money on it. There's no doubt about it. But to me, the rationale is fairly straightforward. As I spend so much time on my phone. My view is when you spend a lot of time on anything, spend a shitload of money on it if you can afford it, because it's going to be worth it for you. So, for example, when I got the Mac, you know, I spent a lot of money on that, and it lasts me. So, although I did buy Apple Care because you know I have a bad history when it comes to dropping the phones, and I also bought this case by a company called Mouse, which I'd actually seen this years ago. And I wanted an Android case, but they didn't make Android cases for the Pixel phones, where they literally dropped one of their cases with an iPhone in it from a weather balloon up in space, and it didn't crack. Like, it's the engineering these cases.
Wow, take that, Otterbox.
They're fairly expensive. Yeah, it's nuts, but it's worth it. So, because I'm a buffoon and I drop phones. Yeah, so.
That is undeniably the truth. And it's worth it. It's worth it. VR, I'm not even going to argue with you. I think it's interesting. I mean, I have had iPhones more recently than Jeremy. I swap backwards and forwards between them every few years. And my experience with the thing is similar to yours. Although, because this has only happened to you recently and you've never done it before, you're a bit more subsumed by the reality distortion field than the rest of us.
I am. I'm frankly, my eyes are twinkly right now.
Enjoy it, man. This is like Brave New World or something, right? You know, you climb out of the Soma pit later. But the thing that always makes me switch away from Android is I get sick of the fact that nothing works together and there's no consistency and design is like a thing that happens at the end of the process. They've got better at it in recent years, but it's still not right. And because they didn't start with a strong focus on design, they've built a community who don't want to do it because half the people building Android apps feel that building an app which is similar to how everyone else's app works is somehow knuckling under to the man and giving up on their birthright to build software the way they want to, which means half your damn apps are like Winamp and don't work the same way that everything else.
I don't think that's the only thing contributing to that, though.
Oh?
I think there is a perception, because if you look at it in the end, the vast majority of apps are cross-platform, right?
Yeah.
And I have tried to get out. I have made a cognizant decision to try to get out of the somewhat of a bubble I'm in technology wise. And I did buy one iDevice.
Yeah.
But I needed a new tablet. And instead of getting another Pixel, I got a iPad Pro.
Right.
Okay.
And it's very nice. So I've been a little bit more deliberately comparing.
Is that the really big one?
Yes.
That's a really big one, right, Jeremy?
Yeah, so for a tablet that will not leave my home, a larger device seems like it makes sense. For a phone that I'm carrying around, not so much. But yeah, so
you go outside.
Huh. You don't have to sell me on the idea that the phones are too big, dude.
Looking at the cross-platform apps, there is definitely a difference in a lot of them and how, from a design perspective, they work. I find that they tend to work better and have more features on Android, but look nicer on iPhone. And I think a lot of that is, if you look at the engineering teams that build these apps, there is a perception that they will make more money on the iPhone platform.
Yes.
And a perception that design matters and aesthetics matter on one platform and don't. So I think given a limited number of engineering hours and a limited number of design hours, they just allocate more of both of those to iOS.
Yeah. And that, I think, is largely Google's fault for not having focused on this stuff at the beginning. Because once you've built a community, you don't care about design. You can't then make them care about design. See, for example, Linux. Much as it makes me sad. But,
yeah.
And the thing I was saying about, the thing which makes me switch away from Android is that. And then you go to the iPhone, you're like, wow, this is so nice. It's fantastic. The thing which makes me switch back is you start to run into weird arbitrary restrictions where you're like, why can't I do that? Why can't I copy an image into the Notes app? And there's no actual reason. And because I'm me, I know there's no technical reason for it. Apple have just decided not to allow you for no reason. And eventually I get so sick of the fact that I've spent £1,000 on a device and I can only do half of what I want with it. And the rest of it, because some bell-end in Cupertino has gone, nah, we're just not going to let you because lol. Then I go, screw you. I'm prepared to live with the fact that I have to do half the damn work myself. And I'm going back to a platform where I can do the work if I need to. And that's what makes me switch in between them. When I get hacked off enough with Android being inconsistent and weird and not nice, I buy an iPhone. When I get hacked off with the iPhone building arbitrary walls around my property, I move back to Android. So I will be interested to see. Because, I mean, as an example there, Mr. I can take and make phone calls on my computer. I can FaceTime with friends. I can airdrop files with my family. I can share screens easily. Every single one of those clauses, I can take and make phone calls on my Apple-purchased computer. I can FaceTime with friends who happen to own iPhones. I can airdrop files with my family because they've all got iPhones. I can share screens easily on the Mac. So you can't FaceTime me because I'm not allowed to use FaceTime.
I know.
I haven't got an iPhone.
And that's fine with me. But that's the point I'm making is that because I've got a Mac, I wouldn't have bought an iPhone if I was running Linux or running Windows.
It wouldn't
have made sense in the same way that, you know, technically you can use an Apple Watch without an iPhone, but not really.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any fucking sense. So I appreciate that I'm wired into the most walled of walled gardens.
Yeah. But I mean, and it's fairly reasonable to say, yeah, I'm in this walled garden, but all my other friends live in California and are also in this walled garden, and my family are also in this walled garden, and it's quite a nice garden, so I'm not that bothered about it.
Well, honestly, I actually thought about that quite a bit in evaluating getting this. When it comes to friends and social interaction, it makes no difference, I don't think. The reason why I don't mind being in the walled garden is because it makes me doing the things I need to do easier. Right now, there's no doubt that having friends with iDevices makes airdropping stuff easier. And that definitely is helpful, right? But, you know, I'm still texting with people with Android phones, and I can still text with people within iMessage, for example. The FaceTime thing is not that big of a deal. It's more the interaction between my Mac and my iPhone that I find helpful. Right. So things like, you know, do not disturb, right? You know, doing that from the Mac, and it enables it on my iPhone. Two-factor authentication is another example of that. Like, there's lots of little subtleties that play a role between these, and definitely receiving phone calls. So the walled garden thing is not as big of a problem as I was anticipating. The big learning that I had was I genuinely thought that if you have an iPhone, that using Google's litany of services was just not going to be as good. And when I installed all the apps up and I set them up correctly, which was a ball ache, because one of the things I like about Android is once you've set your Google account once, then it's easy to authenticate for anything where you log in with Google. You have to constantly re-log in with the iPhone. It's a pain in the ass. But once I got that set up, now it's working fine. I mean, a good example is, you know, images, photos from my camera automatically going to Google Photos. It's a good example of that.
Well, a stupid question then. Are you using the Google Assistant? Because you made a big deal in the past about how the Google Assistant is utterly critical to you, and I'm a moron for not getting with the new voice-driven program.
Ironic that the person that kept the Pixel doesn't use Google Assistant at all. It's actually off.
You were like, I have to have it, and I need it for directions, and I get recipes from it, and I dictate emails and everything. Is that no longer the truth?
I use it to screen my calls. Direct quote, Jonathan Bacon.
I'm assuming you can't get Google Assistant on the iPhone because Apple have gone, no, there's only going to be one Assistant and it's ours.
Yes, you can. It's installed on my iPhone.
You can install Google Assistant?
Yeah, it's on my iPhone. Now, so let me...
Genuinely did not know that.
2 points of clarification. One is, I think there's a little bit of revisionist reporting of my views on Google Assistant. I have not considered it quote-unquote critical, okay? I use it from time to time to find out facts about Iron Maiden. So that's the utilization of Google Assistant. Siri is bollocks. May it be heard throughout the land, okay? So I did install Google Assistant. They have an app in the App Store. What I haven't, frankly, just because I haven't had time, what I haven't figured out is whether you can, so with the iPhone, I think you hold down the power button and it enables Siri.
That was my question.
That's what I've not figured out yet. Apparently you can do it. I just haven't done it. I think you've got to fuck around with it.
I didn't know if you could wire it in so it takes the place of Siri. So, Amazon do, you can have, the Amazon device, which I'm not going to mention his name, like Lord Voldemort, by the Amazon device. Wow, genuine stab of fear then. That's a bit worrying. But the device that shall not be named can be installed as the assistant on your Android phone and completely replace the Google Assistant. So
I imagine on iDevices, it's, hey, Siri, ask a Google Assistant to do this thing.
Well, I mean, it would surprise me if you can replace all the Siri touch points with another one. I mean, maybe you can, and great for Apple. I assumed you can't without
checking. With the iPhone 12, you can play the telephone game on your telephone with multiple assistants. The future is here.
But
yeah.
Okay, so even if, I think that's interesting. I'm looking for as honest an answer as you can manage here. You're not using the Google Assistant much, but do you think you already weren't using it much and that didn't change when you got the iPhone? Or have you stopped using it because it's not as convenient to use now?
There's no doubt that because it's... I'm just not using it at all right now on my phone because it's not really set up. I mean, I can go and tap the thing, the app and do it.
Were you using it the day before you bought the iPhone and now you've stopped using it? Or had you basically stopped using it anyway?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. Like if I need...
So you just have to answer your own phone like the proletariat now?
I know.
Very sad.
So, yeah, there's no doubt that I'm using it a lot less because it's not... You know, I'm holding the button down. What I never did with my assistant, I didn't have it voice activated. So I'd have it so you hold the button down. If I can get that set up on the iPhone, then I'll use it a lot more. But it's frankly less of an issue because we're not going anywhere and we have Google Homes around the house. So I just talk to the Google Home if I need to ask it anything. But if I'm out and about, I'm going to need that for sure. And I've literally tested simple things with Siri, like just adding numbers. I was driving off somewhere and I needed to add some numbers together in my head. And I asked Siri and it like started talking about fucking Taco Bell or something. Like I was like, what are you talking about? Okay. The speech recognition with Siri is unbelievably bad. Like they really have uninvested in Siri. Like Google Assistant is so much better. So, but I'm going to have to figure that out at some point for when, you know, we can eventually start traveling and going out and about when this pandemic eases up a bit. So,
I'm not a big fan of Siri myself, although it may have improved since I last used it, but from the sound of it hasn't, at least from what you're saying.
Yeah, not at all.
I never even enabled it on the iPad.
It's interesting that, there used to be a bunch of things where you're like, but I want to be able to control my phone and make it do things and Apple just won't let me do it. And they've gradually brought in things like Siri shortcuts. Are a really good way to make that kind of thing happen. And you've got 90% of what Tasker could do on Android from the beginning. So it does seem like they're converging on some point somewhere in the middle. Google are gradually saying, no, we're not going to let you swap out anything you like because everything has to go through Google Play services now. So you get updates and, no, we're going to attempt to enforce a higher quality of design on here and make it difficult for your app if you don't get on board with that. And at the same time, Apple are like, well, we're going to gradually open doors so you can do things which you couldn't do before because we're less interested in controlling the experience to the nth degree. I mean, it was Mark Pilgrim, I think, when the iPhone first came out and it was going to be web apps only, but there were only certain, you know, there weren't going to be real apps on it. The pitch was that Steve Jobs went, I've made this beautiful thing, and I'm not going to let you unbeautiful people fuck it up. And I believe there was a certain amount of truth in that characterization.
You know, the two things that really, I mentioned this, one of these in the review, but, you know, I mentioned about pictures, the camera's so good that it really does feel like memories. I wasn't over-inflating that, genuinely. Like,
Do you have a real camera?
I've got a DSLR camera, and I'm not in any way a photographer at all. But, for example, I was sat on the couch the other day watching TV. Biscuit, the dog, was on my lap, and I just took a picture of him because he looked cute. And it looked like the kind of thing, Eric and I both said, we should print that out and frame it and put it on the wall. It had that sheen of a professional photographer taking a picture of something. And I was always impressed with the Pixel camera. The Pixel camera was amazing. But to me, it was amazing from a resolution and a clarity perspective, but especially portrait mode on the iPhone, it looks different. And that really surprised me. And now I know it's a completely emotional reaction to it, because it doesn't make memories making a picture. It just really is. Like, Eric and I were cooking at the weekend, and we took some pictures of some of the food from this cookbook we were making. And it looked like, I sent it to a friend, and he was like, wow, that looks like professional food photography. It's unbelievable.
So what I've heard about the 12 Pro Max explicitly is basically supposed to take pictures that are near pro quality without you having to learn about f-stops and ISO and all the other things.
Exactly.
That come into using an actual camera.
Yeah. What's interesting about that, I think, is I agree with you, and that's really handy. And they're attempting to capture whatever the hell it is that makes photos look good. But
yeah,
a good proportion of that has got to be software. There's only so much you can do with a lens which is tiny on the back of a phone, right?
Yeah, I'd assume
and,
so, yeah.
And so what that means is that Google's approach of, we're not going to put a better hardware camera in the phone, we're going to make it better with software, might be the right thing to do. They're just not as good at photo software as Apple are.
Well, things like sensor size and the lens does matter. Obviously, you're not putting a $2,000 actual lens from a pro style camera.
To some extent, obviously, the hardware does help, and you've got to have a certain minimum quality of hardware in there. But the Pixel had the best phone hardware, acknowledged by basically everybody. So maybe you can go a long way with software, and Google just haven't cracked it yet, or maybe Apple do have something special in the hardware or what? I don't know.
Yeah. Now, I know this is not good for a podcast because it's audio only, but I'm showing you guys this picture of Biscuit. And hang on. I'll put this online, but like, it really is like, when you look at the way he's laying and the blurred background, and you can see the fur and all the different details. It's remarkable. I mean, it does look like it was taken
from a mirrorless or DSLR camera. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It does the depth of field stuff and everything. And that can't be a thing done, well, as far as I'm aware.
It's just aperture enough stuff, really.
Yeah, but it can't be hardware stuff because you don't have the depth of field in a little phone lens, right? Or do you?
From that close, you do.
I think it is a lot of software because, for example, when I was taking pictures of the food we were making on Saturday night, you could see it constantly trying to blur out different bits of the the photo. So you could see the software working, and it's not perfect, but I'd assume that Apple were relative ignoramuses when it came to the software side, and Google had this tied up because their software.
That was a very, very weird assumption.
Yeah. Apple are much better at the software that you use. What they're crap at is network services. Google are really, really good at network services.
That's a good point.
And really bad at delivering software that you actually use.
So camera aside for a second, just the general hardware, because this device looks pretty heavy. Not quite double the Pixel 3 to go along with the double the price, but it's not far off from double the weight. And quite a bit larger. What do you think of the and to set the tone for listeners who are listening to this but are not regular listeners? One place that Ack and I agree on and Jono disagrees on is the size of phone. He's a fan of the phablet. Ack and I are not, so he likes a large phone. But
I do.
How do you? What do you think of the hardware in general for this?
I think the hardware is very impressive. And again, this is podcast, but I'm going to just show you the comparison between the two. The my Pixel 3 and the iPhone 12 Pro Max is almost the same size. It's not that big.
Yeah, not that much of a difference.
They're basically the same. Oh, so you put a giant case on that Pixel 3. Wow.
Yeah, because of the previously discussed buffoonery.
This is, I'll probably break it now, but this is what, you just no case. That's how it works.
Yeah. I'm very impressed with the hardware. You know, I mentioned two things that really stood out actually related to that is the battery. This phone went 2 days on one charge.
Yeah, similar to
using
the
Pixel 5. Extensively.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I will be very interested to revisit this question in a year because everyone gets a new phone and goes, oh my God, the battery's so good. Because it's new. And it's not because it's bigger or
it seems to me the cycle for cell phone batteries is about 2 years. After 2 years,
I think you're right.
They're materially worse.
Like, you're getting to the, I bet you 2 years from now, you'll both be going, it just about lasts to the end of the day, but I normally like to plug it in a bit at lunchtime just to make sure. You know, both of you going, oh, 2 days, easy, it's fantastic, brand new battery.
You're totally right.
It's because it's new. I mean, it's not because it's better, it's just newer.
we're in the honeymoon period of battery life. I have to say, the Pixel 3 was very impressive. Yeah. Like, it lasted a lot longer than I expected, both in terms of just not being flushed down the toilet and battery life.
So just iOS versus Android, what's your 60-second hot take?
iOS definitely feels a little bit more limiting. I feel like Android definitely provides a lot more flexibility. Although I'll be honest with you, digging into the settings of the iPhone was way more expansive than I expected. And I was comparing that primarily to the iPads. I think they've added a lot more configurability in recent years. I think that I for what I use the phone for, it's much easier to use than Android. But I think Android definitely gives you a much broader level of, like, you know, optionality when it comes to what you're doing.
Yeah.
I think I just came to the conclusion I just don't really need a lot of that. It's like, I think if somebody's really into phones and they're staying up to date with all the latest apps and technology and all the rest of it, then I can see someone getting bored of the iPhone pretty quickly. But I'm not that person. Like, I'm frankly probably not that much different to my mum and dad when it comes to what they use their phones for. I just use a lot of very specific apps, and the complexity exists in the apps, not in the phone itself.
Do you own any hardware which is not from Apple and which your phone will need to integrate with somehow?
Yeah, I mean,
because in my experience, it goes one of two ways. Either the people who make this hardware basically care about iPhones, and the Android experience is really shonky and doesn't work right. There were two or three things that I've owned where I've had to dig an old iPhone out of the phone graveyard and install the iPhone app because I can't get the Android one to work. But then the other half are people who are like, this hardware, we want it to be able to work with everything. And then the iPhone experience feels really clunky because there's a bunch of stuff that under the covers iPhones aren't allowed to do, which make it difficult. And it'd be interesting to see obviously it works brilliantly with Apple things, right? So pairing it with your Mac, super duper easy.
Sure. Honestly, everything has worked fine because we have, I mean, to give you an example, we've got Google Homes around the house.
Yeah.
I've got Elgato key lights in here for when I'm recording my training courses.
And they all work. Cool. This is the point
great.
Of asking.
And then like things like the thermostats, and also like the one thing I was curious about was the gate, because we've got like an opener for the gate, and that worked perfectly fine as well. I found, like, we talked about cross-platform apps earlier on. I think, Jeremy, what you said is right. Like, where you said they are often more functional on Android, but they look better. The apps feel much more native on the iPhone by design, right? So a good example is the Elgato app. Like the Elgato app for the key lights, I was having a lot of issues on Android, and it just feels a lot more reliable and it looks better on the iPhone. But all I did for those was just install the app. Everything's already set up. Once I logged in, I'm good to go, right? So it's not really the iPhone talking to the device. It's running the app that talks to the device.
The app, which is doing HTTP to their server. and then
exactly. So I don't really compare that. Overall, I have to say,
do you think of the broader ecosystems, be it that competing app stores, but just even beyond that, just the general, they have two vastly different philosophies, I guess. It's like if you write the story of Android and iOS, it's really choice and control, two platforms to approach it.
Yeah.
Like the name of the book. And that goes for hardware. Well, not so much hardware, but software integrations ecosystem, that's choice and control are the two main points.
Yeah, the works.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm probably the worst person to ask because I'm fairly simple when it comes to these things. Like, one thing I did need to do was install a whole load of apps to get them up and running on the iPhone. And I feel like the iPhone app installation experience is much more elegant. It's easier to use. I think it's easier to navigate than Android is what I found. I definitely think that Apple Pay is much better than Android Pay, from my experience there, mainly in terms of adding the cards. Like, in terms of using it, you just waft it in front of the device.
I was
going to
say, how hard is that? I take my phone out of my pocket and go beep, and it's done. How can it be easier? But
it seems that reading all the reviews that Samsung Pay is still by far the best.
That's what, yeah, yeah. But I found that adding all my cards was fairly straightforward.
Okay, I added one card one time, so it could have been really difficult, and I would have forgotten about it by now.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting, like, for example, you know, where you hover the little square over your card and it's supposed to pick up your number and expiration date and everything. On Android, I could never get that working. I always had to manually type it in. It worked every single time. It worked every time in low light on the iPhone. I was doing it like laid in bed and it worked well.
Okay, now cool.
So, yeah, I mean, I've not really used it very much because whenever I've been out and buying something, I've had a fucking face mask on and then Face ID doesn't work. So I can't unlock the phone to use Apple Pay.
There's no fingerprint unlock on it. It's only Face ID.
Now, that's an interesting point. I was...
Because Face ID is bobbins, to be clear.
I have to say, it is unbelievable.
My complaint is not that it doesn't work. It could work perfectly, and I still don't like it. Conceptually, I don't like it.
I was in the same boat, and that's why I was hoping that there was a fingerprint reader on the phone, ideally one like that's in the screen. No fingerprint reader, because I love the position of it on the Pixel 3, where it's at the back, where you hold the phone and you just put your finger there.
That's where mine is on my Nokia. Yeah, yeah.
The Face ID, I was not expecting to switch it on. That I was just going to type in a passcode. And it is pretty incredible how it works. Like, it works when I've got sunglasses on. It does not work when I've got a mask on. It works in low light. Like, I was in the car last night driving out to pick up a prescription, and it worked in the dark. And obviously, it's the light from the phone that's illuminating your face, so it can do it. But it's pretty incredible.
I hope you heard that, San Francisco Police Department, by the way. I can't think of a good reason why you'd be unlocking your phone while in the car, but...
No, I was pulled up. I was in a drive-thru for the pharmacy.
Oh, fair enough.
Bastard. I mean, I was naked.
Hey, does it... I'm assuming it... I suppose... Given they're both made about 15 minutes from where you live, I'm assuming it integrates really well with the Tesla, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's no different, really. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's, I mean, it doesn't do anything particularly special. The thing I've not tested is CarPlay. I mean, I remember when we had our previous car, I always felt like Android Auto was better. Erica would plug in her iPhone, and I thought CarPlay was a bit bollocks. Android Auto, I thought, was brilliant. So,
is there anything you found yourself really missing from Android, or really don't like about the phone?
Yeah, Android has got picture-in-picture for video. So, if you're watching a YouTube video and you switch out to a different app, you'll get the little overlay, and it doesn't do that on the iPhone, which is annoying.
Wow, we're so different. I hate that.
So, I love it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I use it all the time.
I hate it when Firefox does it.
Why do you hate it?
It's just really, it confuses me. I like it.
Is it because it's content?
it's because I am not content.
Boom.
I suppose after the dig earlier, I did deserve that.
Yes, exactly.
But that's interesting. So, that you don't like, but for every feature you miss, there'll be a feature you're like, wow, it never even occurred to me that this was a thing, and now I'm really pleased. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be things that, like what you mentioned earlier on about, there's going to be times when it doesn't do things that should be obvious. I think I just frankly haven't found those things yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the first to admit that I'm probably likely to run into that sort of thing more than a run-of-the-mill person. Because I'm a developer, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So there'll be things where I'll think, well, I'll just move this from here into here. I can't do that. That's just not allowed. And you think, well, it ought to be allowed. There was stuff where, what was it? Was that opening PDFs? And you had to use iBooks to do it. Now, I think this has changed since, but it was the only app which could do this. It was saving as a PDF or opening a PDF or something like that. iBooks was the only thing that could do it, and no one else was allowed to. And other apps wanted to do it, but you couldn't make them. You had to use iBooks for it. And it drove me crazy. And you're like, there's no reason to do this technically. You've done it just because you've gone, no, we're not going to let someone else do this. That to me, I react really badly to that kind of arbitrary seeming technical limitation.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
You're less annoyed by it than me, but I think it still might annoy you a bit. The question is whether it will annoy you enough to push back on it.
I mean, a good example is the YouTube thumbnail thing. Like, there's no reason why it shouldn't do that. Like the small picture-in-picture thing. Like, they should be able to enable you to do that, but they don't for some reason. But overall, I think I'm pretty happy with it. But I think it's different to a Pixel 5 because it's a different, completely different category of phone. Like, I think if we were comparing the iPhone back whenever the Pixel 3 came out to the Pixel 3, that would be a fair comparison because they were both very high-end flagship phones. But to Jeremy's point earlier on, the new Pixel 5 isn't really intended to be an extremely expensive flagship phone. So I think they're different. What I'd love to see is I still want Google to bring out like a high-end flagship phone. I think if they would have done that with the Pixel, I'd have bought the Pixel. Hmm. I think the only reason why I got this is because they didn't do that.
They did do that with the Pixel.
The Pixels, didn't sell.
The Pixels 1, 2, 3, and 4, and no one bought them.
I think no one bought them, though, partially because where do you buy them from? Like,
it's not, I don't even think that's it. From my perspective, the Pixel 1, 2, 3, and 4 each had a glaring, glaring problem with them. The Pixel 4, the battery life was unbelievably, knowably terrible. They shipped it with a miniature battery. And I think face unlock as well. Those two things just meant it didn't sell well. But each of them had that one thing that was pretty major. The Pixel 5 has none of those things. It's just not a flagship phone.
You can point at the one thing for pretty much every Apple phone as well, though. You're holding it wrong or it doesn't have a headphone jack or whatever, you know? But I think Jono's right that you couldn't buy the Pixel anywhere. But Google's marketing team, of Google's phone hardware marketing team being bobbins at their job, is not going to be fixed by their phone engineering team coming up with a really, really cool hardware phone. Right? If they come up with something which is perfect in every respect, you still wouldn't be able to buy it on the high street because they can't get the phone into shops.
I'm not convinced that an iPhone and a Pixel are fungible devices. I think people make the decision, for the most part, there obviously are people that switch, Jono has switched here, but I think most people decide, I'm going to buy an Android phone, which do I buy? Or I'm going to buy an iPhone. No one says, I'm going to buy a phone, which ecosystem do I want to jump into?
That's interesting.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think you're totally right.
I'm not necessarily, I can see your point.
Do people like you, Ek, who are mobile developers, switch back and forth or own both? Sure.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I get that, but that's such a council of despair. Though it's like, there's no point doing any marketing. People basically decide at birth, and then that's the ecosystem they're in forever. Okay.
Well, not forever. I mean, Jono just switched.
I think I'm the case in point right now.
He's pretty indicative of the average phone user, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think I'm the case in point here, which is Google's marketing didn't grab me for the new generation of devices. And part of that was the marketing.
There's nothing to market. Because right. Like you say, it's average.
But I tell you one thing that did grab me was when I went into and looked at the sales page for the iPhone 12, not knowing anything about it and having all kinds of objections about it, their sales, the way they present their products is mind-blowing. It was so compelling. Like the video and how they break it all down. They know how to create something that you lust after. And I think that's one of the things where I'd like to see Google change their game a little bit is that I think you buy Pixels because they're logical, functional, great devices. And I think people buy iPhones in many cases because they lust after them. I think there's an emotional difference between the two devices. Whenever I was choosing one of my Pixel devices, I chose it because it ticked all the right boxes for what I needed. But when I was looking at the iPhone, I had a different sensation, which was, this thing's fucking sexy. I want this.
But you have to market them differently because, frankly, no one has ever managed to out-inspirationalize Apple because they're really good at it. And deciding that's going to be our USP, we're going to be more inspirational than Apple is, you get away with it if you're Ferrari. Hardly anyone else can.
I disagree. I think there are lots of companies that have done it. I think Tesla, I think Microsoft are increasingly doing it. I think Peloton are doing it. Nike do it. There's tons of companies that do it.
I'll maybe give you Nike. Tesla, you might want to step outside the bubble a bit, dude. There are not that many people in Birmingham going, I massively desire a Tesla as much as I desire the iPhone XS.
I'm not talking about whether people buy them. What I'm talking about is whether people lust after them. I bet you there's loads of people in Birmingham.
Nowhere near as many as want an iPhone, man.
Oh, of course. I'm not saying they're the same by any stretch. There's a lot more people buying iPhones and lusting after iPhones. My point is that I think if people who've seen the Tesla marketing, I think often lust after them, whether they get it or not, whether they can afford it or not.
Saying Apple are the only people who know how to be inspirational. But if you're going –
You just literally said nobody has been able to beat Apple at being inspirational.
Yes.
Except for Ferrari.
But they seem to be the same statement to me. I'm not saying no one else could do it. I'm saying no one else is as good as Apple are at it. And if you're going into competition with Apple, which Tesla aren't, then attempting to do so by out-inspirationalizing them is a mug's game because you'll lose.
Within the context of competing with them, like cell phones, I agree with you. And so, but I'm just saying that outside of cell phones, there are people who are
who
are doing it.
I think Samsung tried for a little while a few years ago there when they started coming out with the Edge, and the commercials were very artsy and aspirational in a way that now they're just like, buy our Galaxy, it's better than anything else Android.
Yeah, the Edge was super pretty. Are they really? I mean, perfect example of a phone which was stunning to look at was the Nokia N9. My lovely, lovely, late lamented Nokia N9. I mean, obviously it died on its ass for about 92 other reasons. But, I mean, they had write-ups about it in design magazines, which doesn't happen to phone manufacturers who aren't Apple.
It was at that time especially notably prettier.
Yeah.
Yes, because that was an outlier for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a shame. That is one of the sad shames about in our technology world. You know what? We've been talking about Pixel 5s and iPhones for an hour.
and we will doubtless talk about them again in the future. But so brief conclusion from both of you. You've got one sentence to sum up the thing which has changed or hasn't changed with your new purchases. Go.
Do you want to go first, Jeremy?
Yeah, I ended my review with the Pixel is back, and I'm going to stick with that. They managed to make mediocrity compelling, and that is not easy to do.
And I would say, similarly, with the end of my review, sorry, everyone, I'm now going to be an insufferable Apple fan. I'm happy with it. I think it's cool, and it's met and exceeded my expectations. So
I like that the MacBook toting AirPod wearing person is now a Mac fan or an Apple fan. The first bunch of very expensive devices wasn't it. It's this very expensive device that makes me a fanboy.
Ask because you get closer and closer to the center of the onion, man. You watch.
You are now inside infinite loop.
Am I going to have to start wearing a deep V t-shirt and change my name to Chad?
You absolutely are. I mean, I'm slightly... technically, we can't tell that you aren't wearing one right now and you've just done your hoodie up to hide it away.
I'm changing and I don't know what's happening.
So,
my dark passenger.
So, Bad Vultures community, we'd be interested to hear your thoughts on whether Jono has betrayed everything that's sacred in technology by buying an iPhone or whether... You also are prepared to consider this a good thing, and you've got iPhones yourself, and you think they're cool, and you're prepared to drop $2,000 on a phone rather than, for instance, a car or something like that.
It wasn't $2,000.
How far away from $2,000 was it?
I mean, it was not tremendously far away.
So shut up, in my opinion.
I mean, it wasn't cheap, that's for sure. But again, you spend the money on the things use a lot.
Honestly, if you're going to look at this thing 7 hours a day, yeah, spend $2,000 on it if you've got the $2,000. It's worth it.
If you got the money, like, yeah, if you can afford it. I mean, we're not advocating that everybody goes out and buys really expensive shit, but if you can afford it, then spend money on the things that you care about.
Yeah. Okay, so yes. Come to our Slack channel, tell us what you think, tell Jono what you think especially, that would be really interesting.
Actually, only if you're nice, okay? Because I'm like, anticipating a lot of hate mail after this.
Nah, it'd be good. Well, I mean, no, actually, no, there will be a small section of people who do consider it a betrayal, same as it was when I got iPhones and what have you. But just ignore those people because they're idiots.
Yes, exactly. And also, haha, we won on the Windows buttons moving to the other side of the window, so screw you.
And other people, are you thinking about getting the Pixel 5? And has Jeremy's opinion changed your opinion? Making mediocrity compelling is not necessarily what I would have chosen as a strapline, but again, I'm not a marketeer. So maybe that does actually sound compelling to you too, gentle listener.
It was, to be fair, said a little tongue-in-cheek.
Nah, man, that's it. It's going to be hacked on the outside of the Google building now. So yes, come and tell us what you think. And this has been Bad Voltage.
Peace out, everyone.
See you later.